That was Bill giving me the high side to start. Do it again, Bill. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm telling Carl.
Yeah, tell Carl.
Tell Carl. Bill hit the microphone. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Guess we can get started now. My name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
The microphone hitter.
Master of the microphone.
Do tell, Bill. Do we have a sponsor this hour?
You know, this hour, we do have a sponsor. It's Pape Machinery, the local John Deere, Ag and Turf, Honda, and soon-to-be steel dealer here in the Reading area. That's right. And they are located at 3119
Quinn
View Boulevard.
Like that new music I added?
That's my
jingle.
Yep. That's real good, Aaron. And so they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And their phone number is 226-9226. You can give them a call.
Our guest just hung up. He's like, this is not going to go well.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm almost done.
Okay, there. Sorry. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, anything, tractors, turf, anything like that, give them a call. They can fix you up. Mower season is right around the corner. So if you've got that mower sitting out in the barn, needs to be worked on, get it in, get it tuned up. Because once that sun comes out, that grass is going to grow about a foot a day. That's what happens. Yeah. So give them a call or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da.
There you go.
You can find more information, actually about our sponsors and about the program and archives dating back to 2010 at wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a page up for today's show, and we're airing this one live on January 12th, 2020. You know, it's funny. I haven't had any trouble writing 2020 on stuff. Apparently, I was completely over 2019. It just...
Yeah.
Good rear view.
No, 2020 is easy.
Good rear view mirror material. Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, this is 2020.
Unlike CNN. Is that where you were going?
No.
Oh.
No, that's not where I was going.
All right.
Been there, done that.
Forget it then.
Yeah.
So we've been threatening to talk about environmental policy again. We've been doing a lot of stuff on China. And we've got a program on Islam next week and how that's connecting to – the political side of Islam and how that's connecting to all the things that we're seeing in the Middle East right now. So that'll be next week. So it'll be kind of fun with the guests, our guest Peter Friedman, who has been on before. And I do have that page posted already at wethepeopleradio.us, which doesn't always happen. So I thought I'd give you that sneak preview. Today, our guest is Jim Beers, and we have not had him on for a really long time. I do not know why that happened. But I do get his emails on a regular basis, and I listed that on the website. His email is on there, Jim Beers, B-E-E-R-S, easy, the number 7, and he's at Comcast, C-O-M-C-A-S-T.net. And by sending him an email, you can get on his, I don't know, it's not really a subscription, but when he fires off an email about all this different environmental policy and lots of things about the Endangered Species Act, his stuff is really informative, and he is extremely qualified to discuss all those topics, so we'll be shutting up here post-haste. He's a retired U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service wildlife biologist, special agent, refuge manager, wetlands biologist, and a congressional fellow. He was stationed in North Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, New York City, and Washington, D.C. He has a bachelor's degree in wildlife resources from Utah State and a master's in public administration from the University of Northern Colorado. He served as a Navy line officer in the Western Pacific and also in Alaska and the Aleutians. He's worked for the Utah Fish and Game, Minneapolis Police Department as a security supervisor in Washington, D.C., testified 3 times before Congress, twice regarding the theft by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of $45 to $60 million. I mean, what's a million among, friends?
Really.
From state fish and wildlife funds, and once in opposition to expanding federal invasive species authority. He lives in Minnesota right now, so I'm sure he's probably not having his mower blades sharpened yet.
No, he's having his snowblower blades sharpened.
His snowblower tuned up. So anyway, he had sent me this really terrific email, and before we start talking, I just wanted to let people know I posted a couple of his articles. One is Lawyers, Biologists, and Such, and it was a really good history of all this, kind of how we got into this whole mess, a really long list of all the things we enacted in specifically 1976. That was a really bad year.
Big year for environmentalists.
Oh, my God, yeah. What a mess. And then the second article is fires, birds, and government. And not, I don't know how many people left have not paid attention to this, but, you know, there's all this discussion that, you know, climate change is causing all these fires in Australia and stuff. And, you know, newsflash, it's arson. They've arrested a whole bunch of people for arson over there. But there's a terrific article listed there on fires, birds, and government in case we don't actually get to that topic. All right, Jim, now it's all you.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, if she tries to interrupt, just keep talking. That's the only way you're going to get away.
Yeah, just roll on. We don't have a break for like 4 minutes or something, so, you know, you got plenty of time. So where would you like to begin?
Well, it seems like you've taken a great deal of interest in what I wrote about lawyers and biologists and such. And that has to do with the way the trouble that Nixon was having, and then with Ford replacing him as vice president in Watergate, and there was sort of a big explosion of environmental laws and all kinds of regulations being written under them, new things from wild horses and burros to tuna and whales and everything else, and how that coincided with the federal government passing Equal Employment Opportunity Act and legislation and regulations giving preferences to women and designated minorities. And there's nothing racial or sexy about any of that, other than it had all kinds of rippling consequences throughout the federal government that people are complaining about today and have pretty well been covered up and avoided and denied by people in government. Both politicians and bureaucrats, plus the people they work with outside, like the non-government organizations like the Audubon Society and the Defenders of Wildlife and those kind of folks. And I tried to piggyback on an article that was in the Wall Street Journal about lawyers. And this lawyer had written a letter to his university at UCLA about why he should get but why he thought he would not get a bonus this year. And he did a really nice job of talking about the way preferences and diversity have sort of, I guess you could say, changed the law schools and the laws and the behavior of lawyers. And in looking at that as an old wildlife guy, I thought, well, that's exactly the kind of stuff that took place in the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the General Accounting Office and other agencies I was familiar with at the same time. And we look at those things today and we say, oh, where did this happen? Oh, that's because so-and-so was a crooked politician or those bureaucrats over there are a bunch of bums or, you know. But it really wasn't that. It was a lot of grand intentions and struggles by politicians to get elected and reelected. And then promising people more and more, kind of like we see today with, the government will pay for my health care, the government will pay off my kids' student debt, the government will do this, the government will do that.
The benevolent government will come forward
exactly.
And make
your
life
happy.
Well,
there was a big explosion of that in the mid-70s. And the early 70s is when EEO was passed. And the two things really collided and then developed together through the 80s and 90s into the 2010 and 2010s into what we see today, and we want to know what we can do about it. And I think it's a pretty complex matter. When you look at Trump saying, "Oh, I'm going to drain the swamp," and people say, "Oh, that the swamp creatures, we're going to get rid of it." Da, da, da. There's quite a bit to it, and the kind of resistance that's in there, that we say, "Oh, that's these bureaucrats, they're the swamp resisting, and the politicians." There's a reason for it and what they're like and why they're doing it. And I think the article was my attempt to try to explain kind of what we're up against when we're concerned about these matters.
Well, it's kind of interesting because those things you wouldn't necessarily put together. And I don't think people realize, as I read your article, the most important thing that I thought people needed to know is how long ago this started, and really how when you look at the development, and you look at the breadth of it at that time, it really makes you realize this isn't going to be, like you said, one guy's change.
Right.
This isn't going to be, you know, one law that we change or one administrative ruling.
Well, it's kind of hard to believe we didn't see this coming, though. I mean,
I think some people did, but
a snowball.
The rest of us were, I don't know, busy doing stuff or whatever, not paying attention. So let's get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of that, of how I don't think people realize how the Nixon mess and Gerald Ford coming in. I thought you developed that really well. So let's hit that when we come back. We've got to take a really quick break. Our guest is Jim Beers. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul.
Got its hustlers, the Bowery got its bumps, 42nd Street got Big Jim Walker, he a bull shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he's big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask off an old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
Good call, Ashley. We don't have enough guests named Jim. I love that song. From here on out, we'll be playing snarky environmental songs, but there you go. Ode to Jim.
Yeah.
So start us off with Nixon and help people understand how we walked ourselves into this ridiculous trap.
Yeah, if you remember, during the Vietnam War, there was all the riots, there was free love, drugs. It was a very turbulent period. President Johnson decided that he was not going to run for election. And he wound up with Nixon running against Hubert Humphrey. And the big thing was, who's going to get us out of Vietnam? And people chose Nixon, I think, mainly for that reason. But in campaigning, Nixon, in trying to get more Democrats to vote for him, made a big point of he'd like to do a lot more for the environment and environmental things. He stressed this a lot when he was campaigning. And so he got elected, and he did. He got past the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, which is the whole EIS thing that you see used all the time for stopping a pipeline here, stopping a road there. The EIS drags on for years and years and into court and through hearings and blah, 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 blah.
And an environmental impact statement will be about how big, what's the volume of something like that?
Oh, so I've seen some that were no more than about 10 pages long, and I've seen other ones that look like a book by Leo Tolstoy, and it was still going on. I mean,
wow.
Really. So that's the truth. You know, it depends on who's...
I think people would be
shocked.
Which one
of the NGOs are pushing it, and, you know, I mean, there's...
Yep.
You think it's a bunch of scientists, you know, weighing things and making scientific judgments, but it's political entirely. Yeah, but it wasn't envisioned that way. When it was passed, it was, oh, that's good, you know, we're going to finally have a forum to discuss what's best for the environment as we live our lives. And the other thing was the Clean Air Act, which, another one, who's against clean air? I mean, if you say that was not a good bit of legislation, people think you should be driven out of the country. But the Clean Air Act is the thing that's used a lot today to shut down fossil fuel power generating plants,
yep.
Argue for mandatory electric cars, putting the wind turbines up because we got to keep the air clean, and the government has this movable standard for miles per gallon and movable standards for so much sulfur, whatever, in the air. And so they can keep cranking on that, depending on who's in office and who's paying enough money to the politicians to have the bureaucrats crank it up even more all the time. So that those two things started off as nice things, but whatever. And there was one other thing done, too, while Nixon was in his first term. He and a bunch of bureaucrats in Fish and Wildlife Service got a new migratory bird treaty with Japan. And, you know, you say, well, what's the big deal about that? There was a migratory bird treaty back in 1917 that put 200 and some species, all the ducks and geese and the songbirds, all under federal protection. And, well, so they signed a treaty with Japan to put a few more birds under there. Cormorants that had been specifically kept off, pelicans that had been, for good reason, not put under federal control because they eat a lot of fish, cause a lot of problems, and when they're under state control, they can be more regulated. They're under federal control, there's no regulation of anything. They're just closed to any management, if you will. So anyway, that all looked like a good deal. And then Nixon came up for re-election in 68, running against McGovern. In 1970, running against McGovern. And while he was running for re-election, Congress and the president signed the EEO Act, which said that women and designated minorities, in other words, not Indians from India or Kazakhstan people or Chinese or Australians, but black people in the United States, literally, that's the definition in there, were to be hired, transferred, and promoted in the federal government workforce at a highly accelerated rate, and that's to be done pretty immediately. Well, that was the way the act was passed. And again, everybody said, well, yeah, there aren't very many women foresters, and there aren't very many black wildlife biologists. It'll be good to have more of them in there, blah, blah, blah. So that was the same thing about the foresters in the U.S. Forest Service, the range managers in the Bureau of Land Management. Those are all agencies in interior agriculture that I worked very closely with when I was in Fish and Wildlife for 30-some years. And anyway, that was getting started, and all of a sudden, bingo. Spiro Agnew was found to have taken some bribes while he was in Maryland, and he had to resign. Congressman Ford was made vice president, and within a year of that happening, Nixon had to resign because he was going to be impeached over Watergate. So we had the things that happened when Nixon was president that were passed, and now we had President Ford, who was coming up against an election for president that he wanted very much to be the president, to be elected in that. The Republicans wanted him to be that. The Democrats wanted to take back control. But they all noticed that for the last 4 or 5 years, since Nixon first got in and they passed those environmental laws, that, wow, a lot of people voted for that. A lot of people love that. They love the bureaucrats that were writing the regulations and going to save all these things. And they also loved the politicians that passed those laws, because that's what we all want. We want more laws for the environment. And everything was looked on as good. Saving this and saving that, protecting this and protecting that was always good. Again, like the Clean Air Act and the stuff, the NEPA that was passed earlier. So there was sort of a giant stampede in Washington in 1975 when the election was coming up, 76 when Jimmy Carter got elected and into that year by the politicians who were running for president and all of the people in their party in the House of Representatives and the Senate, that they wanted more laws and more regulations like that to get reelected and elected. And I mean, it was like I don't know how to describe it. It was like a stampede. It really was. I was there during that, and it was incredible. I listed 30-some acts and treaties and other things that were done during that, and amendments on major legislation that were passed during 1976. Outer Continental Shelf, plant pests, Taylor Grazing Act was amended for Bureau of Land Management, Water Bank was amended, all with more and more environmental activism. Forest Service Organic Administration Act was changed a great deal. The First Seal Act was modified, always to protect the animals more, which you think, oh, that's good. But it was not good. It was slowly removing any active management of these different animals and lands in such a way that people weren't going to use them anymore, we're going to get people out of there, we're going to leave them alone. And that's kind of what happened.
We started the policy of no touch.
Exactly. Now, simultaneously with that, stepping back a little bit, in 1970, when this was kind of getting warmed up and the EEO Act was passed, and the federal government, I saw this happen in my agency big time, and I know it happened in Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, General Accounting Office, and other ones. There was all kinds of requirements to be hired in certain agencies, to get in the Fish and Wildlife Service as a biologist, which most of the jobs were, or a refuge manager. You had to have 40 hours of wildlife management, and the range management the same for Bureau of Land Management. You had to have 46 hours of forestry classes, and you got preference if you had a master's in forestry in the Forest Service, or a master's in range management if you're applying for a job with Fish and Wildlife. It had to do with range management in the western states. So, I mean, there was all these requirements in there. And there was also requirements in each agency that in order to get a GS-13, you had to have worked in two regions. In order to get a GS-14, you had to have had Washington office experience. And all of these were kind of just the way it evolved that, you know, you got preferences based on those kind of factors. Well, when they started, they put the regulations out, and it said the federal government's got to increase the hiring, promotion, and transfer of women and minorities. Within a year, all of the senior people in those agencies were saying, hey, we can't do this. We can't find any women that have got 40 hours of range management or any black employees or black applicants to promote or transfer that have got 40 hours of forestry or have worked in a regional office or worked in Washington as well. We can't, you know, all of this stuff is held up. And you think, well, isn't that wonderful that they're such good employees? But that wasn't it at all. All of the senior executive service in all of the federal government agencies, that's the top people, the real top ones, the regional directors.
They're the ones we can never get rid of.
Exactly. Anyway, they all, and I handle these for a couple of years right here, which is why I know this interesting little tidbit. Those guys all had things for their bonus that was called a work plan. And all of them had two or three, sometimes four, items in their work plan. And they would read like, assures the secretary's policies are implemented in all administrative matters regarding in Region 7 or in the bird division of Fish and Wildlife Service or whatever. And that there was no measure on it. There'd be another one in there that said that assures that the government is notified of any service things, da-da-da-da-da. But they were all value items. In other words, if you work for me and I like what you were doing
and I
want to promote you, I could give you that's a level 5 and you're going to get a maximum bonus because, by golly, Aaron, you've done a great job this year keeping us informed.
And we can't measure it, but that's okay.
Exactly.
All right, we've got to take a really quick break. I'm sorry.
Okay,
we'll
sure.
come right back. So, who would have thought the Civil Rights Act of 1964 could be a problem, but I would submit that the equal employment opportunity thing has been taken to extremes, and I think we're seeing that right now in large part. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is Jim Beers. We'll be right back. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Now, don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphins, let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment, we aim to be. Am I partying for life? Do what you please.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
it wouldn't be 20 below,
it wouldn't be 20 below.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming,
I wouldn't be shoveling snow,
I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow.
If we had some global warming,
if we had some global warming.
Yeah, if only we had some. as reported on TV, eh?
Yeah, right.
So is this about the same time that, because I know, like, we've had forest supervisors out here with an English degree. Well, I have an English degree, but I shouldn't supervise a forest.
Exactly.
Is that when we changed all the standards for
I was talking about these top people in the government hiring and promoting and transferring, I was making the point that that was the first thing they put in their performance plan that ever had a number measurement on it. And what they all got was one that looked like this. It says, assures that 15% of all hires, promotions, and transfers are women and minorities. Now, that's two ways the guy looks at that. Number one, well, that's not a really high amount if I can do it. And number two, if I do that and keep good records of it, I kind of get to be bulletproof against somebody like you that wants to get rid of me or gives you a reason to give me a really big bonus because you can't give me a small one. I'll give you an example. For about 3 or 4 years in Fish and Wildlife Service, all of the top managers had people that just kept track of how many women and minorities they hired, promoted, and transferred. And they would actually go into their performance review for their bonus saying things like, well, my goal was 15% here in the hiring division are part of this thing, and I've done 62.74% of my hiring has been women and minorities. And it's the 15% here for transferring. I've transferred 47.3. All of these
amazing,
big numbers
amazing
with decimals.
Amazing
performance.
Because I had exceeded my goal. Yeah. How can you fire me? And why should you not give me a great big bonus?
Right.
So they really pushed this. So what they had to do in order to get to it was they had to say, why do you need really 40 hours of wildlife? 45 hours of forestry classes. What difference does a master's degree in that? So they whittled
the
all that down to from just a science, 4 hours of science or something. Well, it's true. That's exactly
through sixth grade.
Yeah, and then they got rid of all of the requirements for why you had to work in a regional office, and a two regional offices was even better when you went to get the next promotion, and you should have Washington experience to get. They got rid of all that. So what does that mean? That means that you've got people that are going to get hired, and they're going to be women and minorities, plus you're going to have white people that are politically connected and everything,
too. As long as they're breathing, they're qualified.
Well, yeah, plus, but think of this now, and this is just human nature. These people are getting all these top jobs and everything, and people are thinking, and they see them at meetings looking at them saying, yeah, the only reason you're here is because you're a woman or because you're black. And they wanted to dismiss that, you know, that whole feeling and what they knew was the atmosphere. And what would any of us do? And you'd say, well, the reason I'm here is because people like you weren't taking good care of cormorants and pelicans. And you know, you were building roads everywhere and cutting all the trees down and grazing the public lands and even private lands to where there was no grass left and there was erosions and desertification and blah, blah, blah. And then the wild horses were being killed for dog food, blah, blah, blah. And I'm here because people like me are going to be needed to change that with these new laws. So you got two kinds of these people came into the agencies and really took control. You had the ones that didn't know or care about what they were doing. It was like they had a good job in the insurance company. And, you know, what do you got to do to get ahead and make more money? I got to do it. Okay, I'll do that. Whatever. And then you had the other ones, which really the majority, which were people that were animal rights and environmental radicals, extremists, use whatever words you want, that were pushed into those jobs with a growing a closeness between the bureaucrats and the federal government and the defenders of wildlife, the National Wildlife Federation, the Audubon Society, all of them, the Ducks Unlimited, the Trout Unlimited, all of them. they started hiring more political people in those groups to get pressure and ways to get the people who were the new people in the 1980s and 90s in those agencies to hire not just women and minorities, because with no standards left, we could hire anybody, but to pick up people that were against the use of animals or cutting trees or violently opposed to ranchers making any money from grazing cattle and raising meat and the whole nine yards. We want to get rid of trapping. We want to get rid of for the fur market. We want to get rid of the use of wood. We want everybody to go back to living in caves while we, you know, put wind turbines everywhere.
Well, and
that's a good example of
that's
you know,
when
the
we
way
started
they ignored
too,
that.
Well, and at that time, Jim, we started because I was in school. I was a kid in school in the 60s and 70s, and there was a lot of propaganda being pushed at that time on kids about the environment and the whales and the, you know, stuff. And at that time as well, we had more and more people moving into cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so people had less connection with the land.
Yeah, it was such a new idea, and gosh, it sounded great. How could you be against something?
Don't
like
you remember that commercial with the Indian who was crying because there was garbage on the side of the road?
That angered me.
You know, and they showed you that all the time. And we used to drive across the country, you know, in the van and the family truckster and all the kids. And, you know, you'd go through these places and you'd think, oh, look at that piece of garbage on the side of the road. That's terrible. Who threw that out the window?
Yeah.
And they were really pounding us at that time.
Good. And what you wound up with was national forests and national parks that are overgrown with trees now, fire fuel.
Yeah, that are now bursting into flames.
Yeah, and you've got all these problems with wolves and grizzly bears. The federal government has taken control of them and is forcing in all over the place.
Wild horses breeding with each other.
Wild horses that aren't really wild horses. They're actually just feral horses, but okay.
Exactly. But that's all. It's what you call the faux science stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the faux news or fake news that the president talks about and all of that. Most of it came out of that whole era and all of this federal legislation that essentially took so many things that were once the domain of the state governments and local governments
and
pulled it up to the federal level. And that's why you see so much decline in rural America. It's less and less local taxes collected for local government to do things, and less states' authority to kind of protect the people in Montana from being run like the people in Delaware are being run, and they want to be run because it's all one big federal government. It's just a whole range of things flowed out of that, and now, like you say, and like I see when I travel around giving talks, all the supervisors, the forest supervisors are mostly females. And a lot of the directors and that in Fish and Wildlife Service, not just are black guys, but are people that you say, where in the world did they come from? How do they hire somebody like this that kind of hates the things that we stand for? I often use the example when I try to explain this, when I give a talk, I say, imagine a Defense Department that was made up largely of Quakers. Nothing against Quakers. But I mean, the whole reason for the Defense Department is against their principles and their values and their beliefs, and they're not going to be an advocate for what a Defense Department has to be.
We literally had a forest supervisor here. She's a woman. And she was like two supervisors ago, I guess. And she actually said in a public meeting that her goal was to spend her entire budget on keep out signs because people didn't belong in her forest.
Yeah.
And she thought her forest should be quiet.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
You see that in the range?
Wow.
You see it in Fish and Wildlife big time? And I was getting driven to the airport from a meeting a couple of years ago out west. I won't tell you what state because I don't want to get the guy in trouble. But it was a state guy driving me there. He told me that the regional director of the Fish and Wildlife Service had told a waterfowl biologist whose main job was to provide water and food for migrating waterfowl, both when they're going north and when they're going south. And he was paid entirely out of waterfowl management funds from Congress. He was told that he was not to do anything to do with waterfowl, but only the jobs for a native ecosystem restoration that she told him to do. And she was so obsessed with this. She actually had one of the law enforcement people in Fish and Wildlife Service come in a couple of months later and grab this guy's computers and take them for analysis to see if he had done any work on waterfowl, which he had, and got him in trouble. But, that was his job, and that's what Congress gave them the money to do. But they, you know, when they got away with what I got in trouble for, the stealing the 45 to 60 million, and nobody got blamed for it, that sent a strong signal to a lot of these people, hey, we're working on God's side here. You know, nobody's going to discipline us for anything, so they can do what they want.
Yeah.
That's developed along with this, too.
Well, we see a lot of, I'll hit it after the break, but we see a lot of smoke and mirror appear in our agencies, just kind of scaring the farmers and ranchers and holding things over their heads. So maybe, yep, maybe you can address that when we come back.
Sure.
You can find out more about our guest and archives of the program, and we hope you'll send this to other folks just to torment them. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Never meaning what they say now, never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine. Oh, la da 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 da
da da da da. Follow in line as we board the greenhouse train. We'll say goodbye to acid rain as we fight global warming. We'll stand united as one all around the world. A new day has begun.
Oh, I'm sorry to do that to you, Jim. I just couldn't resist.
That's making me cry a little bit.
Tell you what, Debbie Bacigalupi and I had so much fun. She did some shows with me last April, and we sat down. She was at the house, and we sat down for hours one night and just scoured the internet for all these nutty nature crazy songs. Unbelievable. Okay, I forget what we were going to do when we came back.
You're talking about the way things have changed in law enforcement.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry about that. I got distracted by the song. I'm having, like, in our area here, we have all these problems up in the Klamath Basin. And a lot of that is just driven by, well, terrible science. It's not really actually science. And, like, tribal politics, environmental politics, all that stuff. But currently, you know, there's like a settlement type of thing going on with a lawsuit. And so they're threatening, as the biological opinion gets rewritten, which decides how much water the farmers will get. So while that's in play, they're basically telling you if they don't sign on to this agreement with the Yurok tribe, like, oh, that biological opinion's not going to work out for you. And you're going to get hammered and not get any water. And I thought, really?
Blackmail.
This is what our federal agencies are doing these days.
Oh, you bet. That you see that a lot with wolves, you know, in a lot of states.
That's true. We already played that game, too.
Yeah, they really put the arm on these people and scare them. You see that, you know, getting back to what I originally said about having noticed that article about law schools and the way law has changed, that is greatly aided the evolution of what you're talking about here. The way it's changed, the way that the government relates to you and works with you, whether it's in hearings or in the law enforcement practices. I started, it would have been close to 60 years ago now, in law enforcement work, in biology work, but I've always been good at and enjoyed law enforcement work. And back 60 years ago, things that they would call entrapment, and you couldn't do then, are done now routinely. In other words, I entice you to do something that maybe you aren't doing. I just know that you're guilty, so I set up a little deal and I offer you a bribe. And you know, you may have never taken a bribe in your life, but you say, well, you know, I got a daughter. I got to get to college and get her married. And, my wife's job's now, and my wife and I are getting. So you take it. Bingo, they got you. Like Flynn in Washington. They've got something on you, and then they just sweat you about this, that, and the other thing, and make you plead guilty to avoid other things. That kind of stuff did not go on. More, when I started in law enforcement, people were pretty well guilty that got hammered for being guilty, and they weren't entrapped. And the other thing that that came up along this time in law enforcement is the measurement of seizures. They started passing laws because of drug stuff that says if I stop you and arrest you for transporting drugs, I get to keep the truck or the car it's in or the boat it's on or the house that it's in.
Well, that's true, too.
Oh, that's huge in, out here in the West. They do a ton of that.
Well, think about the way that changes the way I work as a law enforcement guy. I start waiting for you to go into the boat. I start waiting for you to get back to that real big ritzy house of yours that I know you got stuff in the basement from. And so in order for me to get the house, because the end of the month or the end of the year, my seizure rate is exactly $1,474,062, and you two, you've only got $80,000, you only got $30,000. Ha ha! I'm doing a lot better job, and the bosses think that too, because they get to keep some of that money.
Yeah.
The rest of it goes into a
like
drawer in the Justice Department.
Yeah, and you get a bigger budget next year because obviously the it's just running rampant.
Exactly. So that you've got new incentives at work here.
Wow.
And it no longer has anything to do with saving the pelicans or NEPA or the wild horses or whatever. But you've got all these other legal things that the regulations express and law enforcement and the courts are starting to enforce too. So there's been a lot of distortions in the federal government's activities back and forth. I use the one example of a general accounting office. Back up until the 1990s, the general accounting office was 90% or more certified public accountants, CPAs.
That would make sense.
They were accountants, and they did audits. And they were good. And that, but it started to change because of EEO because, and it's again, it's a human thing, there weren't very many women that went into accounting, nor were there many black guys or women that went into accounting. And those that did were in such demand by the big corporations and that wanted to showcase them. Well, we've got four accountants here. Half of them are women. We blah, 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 like that. And because the government couldn't keep them, they had to hire, like you were saying earlier in this program, people with a history degree or a sociology degree or a two-year associate degree from a junior college and whatever, because they could not find women and black people. And they started putting them on audit teams, and, they had no idea what was going on.
They hadn't worked in the field, and now they're auditing other people.
No, they hadn't worked in the field. Sure. They didn't know accounting. I mean, there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty specialized thing. So they started making, the General Accounting Office in the 1990s started making accountability reports. In other words, what used to be an audit, when somebody complained about what's going on in Fish and Wildlife Service with the excise taxes that they're not giving to the state, they sent in auditors, and they went through books, and they did all kinds of stuff looking for money and where it went and the trails for it and everything. But these other people, they couldn't even begin to participate in that. So it got worse and worse, and early in about 2004, after I had worked with GAO on the business about stealing the millions of dollars, all of a sudden I was told by a former colleague that the General Accounting Office, GAO, does not stand any longer. This is not a joke for General Accounting Office. It's now the General Accountability Office, and they don't do audits, they do accountability reports.
No math implied.
Exactly. And again, I'm not knocking anybody or any government program
we'll
so much
for
as
you
don't do audits anymore.
It's just stupid.
Yeah. And it's very complicated when you look at an agent's Fish and Wildlife especially. You look and say, you got fishery money here, you can't use that for law enforcement. Oh, this is research money for migratory birds, you can't use it for endangered species. Oh, no, that's refuge money, you can't use it in the regional office for this. I mean, there's all kind, and that's because that's why Congress gives them the money. See, so you can have somebody like this female regional director I was telling you about tell some poor schlub of a waterfowl biologist, "You better not do any waterfowl work, or you're going to face my wrath, and I'm going to send our law enforcement people into seizure computers and go through them." you can act like that. I mean, that's straight out of something you might see in Soviet Russia or something. But that's the kind of authority it generated, and the lack of accountability through auditing that used to go on has disappeared. And as a result, the attorney generals at the various departments, like Horowitz and Justice, have gotten more and more political. I mean, we had a political guy in Interior there that was a former Secret Service guy. I think he did retire, but all he hired was Secret Service people with him and not auditors. And his job was to follow money in the department. And all he did is please the people on the Hill and please the people in charge, period. I mean, it was as crooked as a pan of guts in there. But nobody could say anything or do anything. You were sort of powerless to, unless there was publicity for it and somebody wanted to put their head on the block, you didn't say anything about it. So a lot of things got distorted, not just because of EEO, but because of the implementation of it, because of the need of the bureaucrats to get bonuses. And then all of these airy-fairy fantasies that were built into these programs in my area, the natural resources area, that stopped them from putting logging roads in public lands anymore or cutting trees. Or pulp mills were shut down.
Right.
And, you know, getting rid of fossil fuels. And all this fire fuel burn, you know, building up everywhere, and we're all saying, oh, my gosh, look at this. It's global warming. And the truth is, you get these catastrophic fires for one reason and one reason only. You got a lot of fuel out there.
Yeah. That's funny. I had a conversation with a guy last week on the phone, and I said, have you ever made a campfire? And the guy goes, well, yeah. I said, okay, so you take two logs and you throw a match at it, right? And he goes, well, no. I said, that's right. You need, like, dry grass, all that stuff. He goes, well, yeah, you've got to kind of build the thing. He, like, tells me all about how to build a little campfire. And yeah. I said, well, that's what you're looking at.
It's not
global warming. It's literally a campfire on a major, major scale.
Exactly. Without roads through it that you can make fire breaks through. And with all this...
And you can't even get there to fight the fire because they're decommissioning all these roads.
You can't even pull water out. Fish and Wildlife Service has stopped firefighters from taking water out of certain creeks or lakes because there's an endangered trout in there.
There you go, of course. They want to take our dams out, so you can't use the water in the reservoirs behind the dams to fight the fires either. So, of course, the plan is they're going to replace that water.
Yeah.
Oh, really? How are you going to do that? You're going to have fire hydrants in the middle of nowhere?
Yep. That's exactly right. So you've got these distortions, and these people that were educated, since you were talking about yourselves being in school, that were educated in all of this, the native ecosystem, natural ecosystem, man doesn't belong there. We should not use any of the wood or any of these firs or anything. So that distorts the state Fish and Wildlife Agency's funding because hunting and trapping are going down.
Well, they're no longer called Fish and Game. Look at California. Yeah. They went to Fish and Wildlife.
Exactly.
So much kinder.
Yep.
Gentler.
Yep.
And you know, they weren't going to switch over their name until they, just a little side note here, they weren't going to switch over their name until they ran out of all their outfits and patches and, you know, all their little trucks got scratched and stuff because it wasn't going to cost the taxpayers any money. And, you know, it was just amazing. All that stuff just got wrecked right away, and they magically had all new outfits and patches and labels on their truck. And, yeah, Game is no more.
Well, a lot of things are no more in regard to that, too. We no more have young men that are very enthusiastic about shooting things.
That's true.
When we've got an outbreak of rabies or something and wolves or coyotes, or people don't know how to trap anymore when we need to trap some mountain lions or something because they're getting out of control. And everything has to be done by the government in a haphazard way, and they don't want to do it anymore. So that's all this, so we'll pick them up and we'll transplant them stuff. And, I mean, I got from a very good friend in Northern California there that he one evening was working on a fence in some woods on the edge of his property with a gravel road that went by it. And it was because a coyote was coming through there and killing some of his sheep. And he was putting a snare there. You're not supposed to put snares out. But anyway, he's telling me this.
Hold on, late at night.
We're going to
get cut off by the news here in 5 seconds. We're going to come right back with our guest, Jim Beers. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Or face the fact the cracker box palace may have no other choice than to deport you.